Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have Akhtal here. Akhtal, why don't you come on up? Akhtal is from Sea Haven and is going to give a impromptu little talk on what exactly Sea Haven is and what they do. I turn you over to Akhtal.
Hi, I'm Akhtal, also known as Ryan Lackey. I'm the CTO of Haven Co. We're basically a global, secure co-location company with our first data center located in a very unique place, the Principality of Sealand. It's an old World War II British anti-aircraft fort that they left in international waters after the war. They left it abandoned, and there's some weird international law precedent where if you leave territory abandoned for like n number of years and clearly have no involvement with it, it's called dereliction of sovereignty, and people came, a British Army major came, took it over, and declared it a principality, and has been there since like 1966, and the British have been respecting that, and it's pretty cool. So we went last year and started setting up a server co-location center there. We're looking at doing a 10,000U server colo center there with like arbitrary internet access, like fiber and everything else. So it's pretty cool. But the thing I want to talk about is we're in doing a global secure co-location center. We've found certain problems, and we are addressing them. And some people have addressed them before, and other people haven't, and some of them haven't been addressed by anybody. And we're hoping to get everyone to think more about some of these issues and come up with a really good solution that everyone uses. So the two big technology areas, which are the most interesting, are tamper-resistant hardware we're using on our servers, and we're using an interesting network topology. I guess the first thing I'll talk about is the tamper-resistant servers. Basically, we have these 1U servers that are our standard product, and in them we have a PCI card. So our whole security model is, so we've got our data center. Our data center is like in the middle of the North Sea and has like guards and everything else, so it's a real pain to get there in the first place. After you get there, then we've got like guards and stuff on site. We've got locked rooms, like all sorts of stuff. But then the individual machines are like a 1U internet server with like dual processors and two PCI slots. And in one of those PCI slots is a tamper-resistant PCI card. Basically, they're like metal boxes that have a bunch of little wires inside them, and either a 486 or an AMD or an ARM processor inside them, and like 16 megs of memory and a PCI busmaster interface. So basically, they're a computer on a card, and they're inside this like tamper-resistant metal envelope, and they're set up so they have a public-private key pair, which is certified, so that if anyone does anything at all to these things, if they have radiation, if they notice someone trying to open them up, or if they pretty much any sort of tamper event, they destroy themselves. So it's sort of like a really secure environment to do your computation. People have used those in the past. They're actually outgrowths of so banks use them for processing your PINs on your ATM transactions, and the military uses them as crypto modules. There's a standard FIPS 140-1. The ones we're using are level 4, which is the highest level. And basically, I would not, if somebody gave me $50 million to try to break into one of these things, I wouldn't really think I'd be able to do it, but it's pretty hard. They're really cool because you can authenticate yourself to them remotely over the net and prove that you're talking to a known good device that hasn't been tampered with, because it'll sign a nonce and stuff like that. So they're really secure. So these things have existed for a while, like for like 10 years, and nobody's really used them for anything interesting yet. And there are maybe 5 manufacturers: IBM, Concord Aerocom, Dallas Semiconductor. A bunch of people make these things. But they've been used, if anything, as like a crypto accelerator, which is sort of, sort of like a boring application. It makes things faster, but it doesn't really do anything new. And what we're doing is we're trying to encourage people to structure applications so that you put the security critical stuff, the trusted computing base, in this card, and you use the host CPU for anything that's not sensitive. So for an example, if you have like, a website that takes credit card orders, you would you do your SSL session with the user to like fill out your shopping cart or whatever, and then your credit card number would go direct to this little box. So even the merchant wouldn't necessarily have access to the credit card. It gives you all the benefits of things like SET, but it's easy to do. It just requires like adding one line in your form. So there's stuff like that. There's a huge number of applications that could use them. Any sort of like a, I'm sure like CA software uses them already. There's all sorts of anything that has any sort of security component to it at all. They're pretty cool. We're using them internally to manage the boxes. What we want to do is provision, If you want to go to like a regular colo site or a regular managed host site, they usually give you like a 24-hour turnaround for getting a new box. We're trying to get that down to as long as our credit card verification takes, if you pay by credit card. And that means we need to have the machines already setting up, it's already set up, and just give you an SSH key into the machine. And we want to turn over the whole control of the machine. We don't want to retain root or anything on them. So we're using the cards to prove that we've transferred the full control of the machine. I'll be publishing like white papers and junk about all the details. So we've got the tamper-resistant stuff, which I'll talk about more later. But the other cool stuff is our network. Basically, we have routers that are at the periphery of our network that can do line rate filtering on like many, many gigi interfaces for private interconnects with people. And if you have a Cisco and you try to do line rate filtering on like 12 gigi interfaces, you don't have a CPU left. Whereas the routers we're using from Juniper have like enough CPU that it doesn't really matter doing line rate filtering. Basically that's so that if anyone, like the old, like the stuff with Yahoo during the NANOG meeting, if that were to happen, we would be able to filter line rate on stuff. And also we can easily put a filter on our network to prevent spoofed addresses from leaving our network. Things like that. Very, very reasonable changes that nobody's really done yet. I don't know, they're just sort of things that people should do. So we've got the tamper-resistant hardware and the network security, and they're sort of our two main cool technologies. But the other thing is the whole idea of putting servers in arbitrary jurisdictions is sort of interesting. We're trying to maintain uniform quality of service all over, and it's pretty tricky to do in some countries where it's very hard to get high-quality network access, but we've solved it in certain places. So it's interesting. I don't know. I think a lot of people had questions about the whole like Haven Co. CLAN thing, which is, I guess, what I would address if anyone has questions. Because like all the like actual details about what we're doing are like elsewhere. And cool. Yeah.
How are you getting the connectivity there? Did you lay cable?
We have spread spectrum RF. We have microwave. We have satellite. Right now, we're looking at getting fiber to multiple countries in the maybe within the next year, but not right away. It's actually tricky in the North Sea because during the winter you don't want to be laying cable because, as I found out, right before coming here I had like 5-foot high waves, which it doesn't sound like much, but when you're on an 18-foot boat, it really sucks. Also, when you're going 30 miles an hour in an 18-foot boat, it really, really sucks. So we need to do that like either this summer or next summer, and we're probably not going to get it done this summer, so I don't know. But we have STM-1 or OC-3 microwave links, so I don't think we're going to run out of bandwidth anytime soon. We can actually go up to STM-4 or OC-12, so 622 megabits per link, and we can do like N links, so it's a lot of bandwidth. We're using Juniper M20 and M160s for our BGP. We're doing on the CF cards, yeah. The ones that have the F at the end, the ones that do filtering on the line cards themselves. Sure. Unfortunately, really expensive, but they're really cool. Yeah. We're also using our network. I was just sort of sitting in the thing, and they came and said I was supposed to be speaking. So I don't have my laptop and all my other stuff. But our network basically looks like we have these remote nodes that are all around the world. That do our BGP peering and stuff and have the private interconnects. Then we do filtering there, and then we run a much lower speed connection back to our site so we can get like 20, 40 gigabits of interconnect aggregate with people at our remote locations. If you put in something in like May West or May East or a real place like Pakes or Lynx, you end up with, it's very cheap to run private gigi interconnects in the same building versus very expensive for us to run gigi all the way out to CLAN. So what we do is we do the filtering there, we do some caching there, and we run the links back. And caching is one thing that we really want to look at because denial of service attacks are always tricky because it's hard to tell if it's just load or if it's denial of service. But if you've got a cache, you can solve both of the problems sort of. Anything else? More questions? Yeah. Various countries, ones that have favorable laws for cache being a network appliance and not a legal hosting thing. We're still looking at exactly which countries. And they have to be countries that have good laws. And so all of our stuff is we have to find countries that have lots of customers nearby for latency issues, good telecommunications infrastructure, and good laws and stable government and stuff. And it's, oh, yeah.
Are you constructing caches as securely as
The caches, are we constructing our caches as securely as our hosts? They're secure from being hacked into, but they're not necessarily secure objects or anything. Most of the stuff is public HTTP objects that you'd be caching, so it's not really a security issue so much, but we're looking at things that can do like password-protected caches and stuff like that at some point for people that are selling content on the internet, hypothetically selling content on the internet for money, and they would want to use a lot of bandwidth, like, say, fast Ethernet per customer, and they have a relatively low marginal value to their product. So, yeah, we need to do distributed caching for them that can be password-protected. But there are a lot of decent caches out there, but I think I haven't really looked at the exactly what caching system. That's not my thing. I have somebody else doing that. So I don't know. We're getting a decent cache solution, I think. We've actually gotten no negative response from governments. They're all pretty, as far as I know, we've gotten no negative response from governments. I don't actually handle the press stuff, so I don't really know. But as far as I know, all of the reaction from just about everyone has been fairly positive. Like, some people, they're, like, incredulous, like, oh, you can't do a data center in the North Sea or whatever. But, like, even some of the reporters that came out were like that. But after they see it and stuff, they're okay. So there's not been any real negative response. Not to say there won't be in the future, but whatever. Sure. We've always had warm running water. The problem is whether we have water. We have water now. We have a water maker that can take like 25 tons a day, so we're not going to run out of water anytime soon. You in the hat? Right. So there's this SSL. If it did signatures, would be, and did like null crypto as a widely accepted standard, would be really cool. If there were a way to basically just sign a bunch of pages rather than encrypting it to the users. We can put crypto, so for signing the objects, this is definitely a good thing, and we've thought about doing it, but we need to find a way to do it in a widely supported fashion. Like, it's no useful. We can't control what client software people use. So, I don't know. Okay. So they're pretty much, so we're working on something where you just give us an ISO image and we'll boot off of the ISO image. But the other thing is we're really, really into remote management because I never want to go in the machine room because I want to be able to run a data center in like some country that I don't ever even want to set foot in, never even go there to set it up and have it just shipped and set up and never have to go to do physical maintenance. So we have remote console support, we have remote power cycling, we have remote reconfiguration, everything. For now, though, we're just doing, I think, Debian and FreeBSD as our two default OSs because they have nice network update stuff, and they're fairly easy to deal with. The other BSDs we'll add, too, and probably we'll have to add Red Hat, but I don't know. And we're also going to do Sparks, the Netra T1s, because they're like reasonable machines, and so Solaris on those. But you can run whatever OS you want, though. Okay, so we, in principle, will do full anonymity. There are practical issues with how to pay us anonymously, which can be worked out, but we definitely respect that, like, if you're a political dissident in, like, Burma or something, and you might be committing a serious crime by publishing information about your government's abuses or whatever, you need a place to post it, and that you really don't want to have pressure put on you, so... we can certainly do anonymity. It's just more difficult. Once there's a good anonymous payment system out there, somebody should do, then it'll be really easy. But as far as our interactions with customers, we have we set up a user-selected authentication scheme, and we use that. We don't rely on any real identity. So we don't really need an identity. We just need a pseudonym to deal with you. And it could be like a one-time pad list or something. So, yeah. Where? So where would you mail it, though? You could mail it to CLAND, but that would be tricky. We have postal addresses, but we don't really, I think they wouldn't like suitcases. But we could certainly be dealt with. I don't know. But certainly there are many cases where people would want anonymity for protection for various things or just for their own political reasons or whatever else. So it's definitely supported, but we need a good way to pay. There are a few payment systems out there you can do. Like, I don't think PayPal would be very happy about a very large transaction going through them, but there are various online payment systems, and we'll set up accounts with all of them, and if you can use one, then great. So. We have more than one satellite link, and none of them go to the UK. All of our line of sight stuff has to go through the UK. The fiber, we're looking at not going through going through the UK and another country. The North Sea is like a really popular fiber location. There's like 300 fibers, and laying a new fiber is not actually as bad as you would think. So, people have fibers that terminate in like Belgium and the Netherlands, and as well as the UK. And the UK is like, of all the European countries, the UK seems to be catching on the internet, I think because they speak English and it makes it a lot easier. And the Netherlands are a really big internet country, and Germany, so, and all of Scandinavia. So there's a lot of North Sea internet connectivity, and there's always going to be more. The cool thing is this new repeaterless fiber stuff. You can run a repeaterless fiber for like a tenth of what it used to cost and not have to do maintenance and stuff. So it's quite good. That's certainly the answer to are you looking is yes. It's a really long process, though. Basically, you have to go to the UN Committee 3166 Committee in Germany, which has like 9 members, 5 of which are from big countries and 1 of which is from ANSI and everything else. You have to get them to approve it. But you have to show them like cause, and it's really confusing. I wouldn't hold your breath waiting for it, but I think it'll happen eventually. The other thing is we were originally going to take .ps, but then the Palestine was able to get .ps because they're now a country, so we need to pick a new one. We have customers, but we can't name them because we have two NGOs that said they could be named. We have Crypto Rights Foundation and Tibet Online. But we're not allowed to name our other customers. Like, it would be sort of useless to have anonymity if you had anonymity and then I named you at a talk. But yeah, we're also not really set up for selling large amounts of bandwidth yet. We're just still in the build-out stage. We're looking at, so before the end of summer, but think of that as like the 21st of September, not as like any time really, really soon. But we're going to be set up with lots of bandwidth and machines. We don't want to go live until we're really, really ready because it would suck to like spend all our time fixing broken things. We've got all the stuff is on site. We're just configuring it. It's quite fun. Could you please repeat that? So the question is, assuming that we are a country, what are our laws like? We're a principality, so the ultimate law is that the prince is the prince and like can do whatever. We're actually in the middle of drafting a constitution again and stuff like that, so it's very, I don't really get involved in that, but I think our laws are in general, in spirit at least, they're mostly everything is the same as the UK because the prince is also a British citizen and is like a decorated war hero from World War II and is really patriotic and everything. So certainly we're not going to do anything that would be even questionably that. We're also, like, we even are more restrictive than the UK. Like, Sealand is dry. There's no alcohol on Sealand. It would be bad to have alcohol in this 6,000 square foot place with 15 people. So little things like that, we're even more restrictive than the UK, at least for our own site. Really, The main thing is that they're very pro freedom of information. Anything that's information is fine, but anything physical, they might not like. So, like, don't murder anyone on Sealand, or it would not be very pretty. So we have an AUP that we ban spam and we ban network attacks that originate from our machines. Those are the only things that are actually in our AUP. We might add more stuff if there's some other infrastructure attacks type stuff. The government of Sealand has said no kiddie porn. So that's something that's our other corporate thing is we don't do anything that's illegal in the country in which we have the data center, in that data center. So if we set up a U.S. data center, it would be all totally U.S. legal stuff. And if we set up a U.K. one, same thing. The main thing is we actually follow due process and make sure that people actually have warrants and we don't just sort of hand them data on the side and stuff like many other places do. So even if we set up a U.S. data center, it would be much more law-abiding than a place that'll just sort of hand over your data to somebody because they call up on the phone and tell customer service that they're you or whatever. If somebody had like political information about like the government of the U.S. or the U.K., that's not against our AUP, so it's totally fine. We reserve the right if there's something that seriously threatens our continued viability as like staying in one piece. We reserve the right to just shut down the customer, destroy the machine, and refund their money. But we would never turn over the identity of a customer. If somebody's like a spammer based at our site, I think our chief network architect, Avi, would probably like track them down himself. And I might also, but I don't know if we have like a corporate policy of doing that. Okay. That's very complicated. These people issued fake passports in the past using the name of Sealand, so now that has a really bad reputation. So I think we're basically not going to be doing that. There have only been like 100 or 200 real ones ever issued. I'm supposed to get one once I finally give them my photo and fill out the information. And they're only going to like employees and stuff like that. I don't think we're ever going to be selling them because it just is bad. A lot of countries do sell their passports, and actually fairly respectable countries, like Ireland for a long time was selling passports pretty much, and a lot of places do. But because of this bad history of them specifically, we're not going to do anything like that for a really long time. So we can do 10,000 U on Sealand, and we can possibly expand. We've looked at various options for that. More interesting is putting stuff elsewhere in other parts of the world. It's interesting. It's a legal question and everything else, but we have territorial waters around us. From an engineering standpoint, it can certainly be done. It's only like 20 feet deep water, so you just like put stuff and then you've got a tower. But it's unclear. I think what we're going to do is build facilities in the larger size elsewhere and then keep this one for a while and then maybe worry about spending. The other thing is we need to be able to expand without shutting off service to anyone during the outage or during the expansion, and that pretty much modifies how you would expand. You would like build something separate and connect it and stuff like that. So we have on our local net, we have a net 10 facility-wide, full-rate, free network for all of our customers. And we have, because the machines have two fast D ports, and the other fast D port is an internet port that goes through, like, VRP and stuff. I think if you're going to, like, try to do a denial of service flood, you'd probably want to do it on the fast network because it'll be throttled at the switch for the other one. And our network infrastructure itself will stand up to all of our customers transmitting 100 megabit full rate on all ports at all the time. If a machine gets overloaded, we have monitoring on our switches and we see little graphs and stuff and too much traffic is not good, but I don't know. We haven't really, I don't think it's going to be any more The question of whether external people attacking our own customers attacking our own customers attacking external people, and we focused on the external people attacking our customers and our customers attacking external people, and the internal to internal is sort of like included in those two, because we can just treat it as a separate net. And if your local network goes down, it's not really that big. If your local, only local site network goes down, the one that's not used for internet routing, it's not such a big deal. But yeah, people shouldn't, that would be against our AAP. So anything that's like anti-infrastructure is against our AAP in general, so it would be bad. They'd probably end up throttled. But. Oh, yeah. I think so. That's not my thing. I just do technical stuff. But I think we're looking at doing various licenses. You really want them to be more than just a piece of paper. You want them to have some sort of actual checking as far as the institution, because it's sort of like a franchise. You don't want to give somebody your brand name to use and then like have them screw up or something. But yeah, we're looking at various licenses for various things. And basically, it's only internet businesses that we'd be licensing because there's no physical space for anything else. But there are plenty of internet businesses that require licenses that might be interesting. We're not going to require licenses. You can set up a bank or you could do banking transactions if you're a bank foreign or whatever else. You're just governed by your laws of incorporation and your country of incorporation. We just host servers. We don't really care what you do. That might be part of what we're doing, but that's not Havenco, that's the government of Sealand. We may handle the technical details of that, but we're not the government of Sealand, so. It is pretty close, and they are investors and stuff, but it's all pretty unclear. In the case of a political dissident or in the case of a general internet user? Okay, in the case of a political dissident, some of our technical features are useful. Our operations policy of letting you sign up anonymously would be useful. And it's generally reasonable quality colo. The problem with political dissidents are really nice, but they unfortunately don't have very much money and they're not a very big market, so they're not really our core market. Mainly what we're looking at would be internet finance related startups, people that need that. So if you're like a big bank and you build a huge vault and put your computer in it and have like ultimate security, you've only got one site, so you have a sort of a bad choice. So you spent like millions and millions of dollars. You can either spend like a very small amount of money in colo in a regular facility or build like a cheap facility for your backup server, which has all of your confidential data on it, and then your security investment, your first thing, is worthless. Or you can spend a huge amount of money on building your server, or you can just not build a second site, and then when it goes down, you lose. What we want to do is provide as much security as anyone else's facility in the world would do, even if they build a whole facility for themselves. Which is pretty easy to do for us because we've got a good physical security location. Plus, our policy of not letting customers on site means we can optimize for security much more than a place where you can walk around and see the emergency power off buttons on the wall and stuff. Basically, the internet startups that are finance related or security related, big financial institutions, people that want, some of our network technology might be useful for general purpose web hosting, but we're really like the secure colocation industry. Plus, we're actually price competitive with the European market right now, given European colo is so expensive. So, in some cases we can compete on price, but that's not really our general policy.
Do you have a safe site rating?
Not yet. Good plan. Do you have a safe site rating? And the answer was not yet. I've actually never heard of them. Which is probably not good, but if they email me, it's cool.
So.
Is it okay? Okay, cool. A couple last questions.
So
our former PR director was actually Bill Scannell, who's like a big anti-Scientology guy. So it'd be sort of redundant for you to set up another anti-Scientology site. We're not particularly coercive. Like, you'd have to put like a frigate nearby and threaten us, like, seriously. They can, but it's a really, like, in 5 years. It takes like 5 years to go through international courts. So they don't do things like injunctions against law-abiding companies that don't break the law and give a very large organization an injunction that pretty much shuts down their business for the next couple months, like certain countries. And I have like a couple more questions. So, redundant diesel generators right now. We're looking at fuel cells and microturbines actually as an extra thing. We have three diesels on site, one of which is enough to run the whole site. We run two at any one time, 50% power each, all through a UPS, through two UPSs. If we lose one generator, we power up the other one immediately, fix the one that's dead. This is, we're shooting for like complete power reliability. I'd rather lose network than lose power actually, so. Because if people use like encrypted file systems and stuff, it's not really good to lose power. We have a 77-ton diesel fuel tank, and some extra fuel, like another 10 tons in extra tanks, which is like 6 months of fuel. So, a lot of fuel. Ah, so we have technical, so why, the question is why should you trust us basically? Because Prince's law could be the whim or whatever. We have our server set up so that we don't actually have access to the servers. In the tamper resistant modules or in the servers, we wouldn't be able to tamper with a tamper resistant module any more than you could. And if you have any seriously sensitive data, you can put it on that. Certainly we can deny service, we can just pull the plug, but that's annoying and anybody can do that. As far as us releasing confidential data, we just don't have confidential data, so we can't release it. And one last question. Yeah. So it's only an outgrowth of our operations policy of being really careful to authenticate people using whatever authentication means they use. If you're, like, say you're a very rich private investor, you might not want people to know that this is your personal server that you're doing whatever about. Or if you're a large bank, you might not want which employees have access to it to be known to the outside world. So you might want to know that it's like a B of A server, but you don't want to know that like the CTO and like some random technical employees have access to it. And that information itself might actually be fairly confidential. And we just have a general flexible policy of authenticating people and stuff like that. So you can use anonymity, you can have full tracing, you can have us call you back whenever something happens. We can do only accept PGP signed instructions. We can do pretty much anything you want. And we'll automate it as if like one person wants a particular thing, there's no point in automating it, but if a bunch of people want a particular thing, then we'll automate it. So, be cool. Okay, that's pretty much all the time I have. So. Yeah.